Hello there, and welcome to Beyond the Surface, where the saying to be seen is to be understood comes to life. I want to begin by first honouring the traditional custodians of the land we live and work on. I live and work on Gundungurra land, and I acknowledge the traditional landowners of my guests near and far. I pay my respects to the elders past, present, and emerging, for they hold the memories, the traditions, and cultures of our First Nations people. The land below my feet is, was, and always will be Aboriginal land. I'm no stranger to the profound journey of pain, grief, anger, and heartbreak that often accompanies the loss of church, community, faith, and the unwinding of our core beliefs. In the midst of this, though, I found healing in the stories shared by others who walked a similar path to me. Here in the warmth of these digital walls, I want you to feel at home. This is a space where your memories and your story is not just acknowledged, but deeply seen and believed. So kick back, relax, and let's embark on a journey where your story is not just heard, but embraced. I want to welcome you to a community where storytelling is a powerful force. This is Beyond the Surface. Welcome, Kate. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Whereabouts in the US are you?
I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, so Midwest.
Okay.
Very cold in the wintertime.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. And it would be cold right now, wouldn't it?
Right, so probably
Yeah.
opposite of where you are.
Yeah. It's like sweltering here. I'm in like, a summery dress, and it's always, I love chatting to people on the other side of the world because the stark clothing differences and everything is always really funny. I'm also a tinsy bit jealous, to be fair,
Oh, really?
of
I'm jealous
the
of you.
yeah of the I love winter. There's nothing more than I love running rugging up with a cozy blanket. So yeah.
We can swap places. That's
We
fine.
could, yeah. I mean, maybe we'll do the holiday movie where we just like what house swap
Swap.
for a couple of weeks. So thank you for joining me. Where does your story start?
Well, it depends on what you want to focus on. I grew up in a Christian household, and the older I got, the more fundamentalist and extreme my family became. We got involved in the Christian patriarchy movement. I'm not sure if that's going to be familiar for Australians. And then I became what we called a stay-at-home daughter as an adult, and I didn't leave my home until I was 25. And so I lost half my 20s to this, and leaving was difficult. And I eventually got out, still struggled with finding my place in church, eventually leaving church in my 30s. And just, yeah, it's been like a long journey of dealing with that. But now on the other side, I've written a memoir. I get to volunteer for a nonprofit that helps spiritual abuse survivors. And I have my own podcast now as well with some friends called Survivors Discuss. So I feel like in a much better place than I was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. What was that environment like growing up?
I was very isolated for most of my childhood. I started going to Christian school in kindergarten when I was five, and then my parents pulled me out and decided to homeschool me. And so I was homeschooled all the way up till I was 18. And for a lot of that time, I lived in the mountains in Colorado. And so we didn't have like next door neighbors. It was the mountains. So I'm very isolated, very sheltered, didn't have a lot of access to outside information. So I didn't understand that my life wasn't quite normal.
Yeah, there is
This is a bit of a running, well, it's a running therapy joke more so, but whenever I hear people talk about the fact that, that it was just their normal, their reality, they didn't know anything different, I always think of the joke about PTSD survivors will say, just wish my life was like it was before the trauma. And complex PTSD people will say there's a before the trauma, because you were sort of born into it, right? And you don't know anything otherwise. And that's the power of indoctrination, I guess.
It's so true. I think I've worked that on that myself in therapy of just like dealing with I'm building a new life from scratch a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But that gives me a lot of freedom too to like figure out what I value and what I want my life to be like now. So there is some freedom in that as well on the other side. So.
Now, I think there probably is some, when I talk about there is a religious difference, I guess, in the landscape of it is a bit of a shit show over there in terms of like religion and politics and everything, right?
To put it mildly, yeah, to put it mildly.
Yeah, I mean, and so we see it a little bit in terms of Hillsong, and it was very, very deeply connected to a former prime minister, and so it is like ingrained in some way, but not quite as entrenched as what it is in the US. So explain what Christian patriarchy is.
Okay. So it's exactly what it sounds like. I call it a grassroots movement because it's spread through churches across different denominations, through magazines and newsletters, email chains back in the 90s and early 2000s. And it's the idea that God is masculine and he created Adam first. And so men are the leaders of society. So that includes government, church, and family. And then women, because they were created second, are subordinate to men. They submit to them in all aspects of life. And it really shows up in the US as more of a more extreme version of complementarianism, where we have very strict gender roles. The father is in charge of everything. The mother follows his lead, and then the children are beneath that, obeying whatever their dad wants. And so that's the basic structure. And then for girls growing up in this, they're taught that they're never going to need to go to college or have a job or have anything outside of their goal to become a wife and a mother. And so that's what happened to me. I didn't have any access to those things that you might get after you turn 18 of looking for opportunities and growing as a young adult. I was just waiting to get married. But instead of all those things, you're supposed to learn how to cook and clean and manage a household. So I learned those things, but I didn't learn much about anything that would follow my own dreams or my own passions. It was all about my goal was to follow a man's vision for me. So that's it in a nutshell. It's not very good for anyone who doesn't fit into those gender boxes. But it started, I think, in a reaction to feminism. And so like 70s with we see in American politics, Roe v. Wade. And then like this reaction to feminist ideals, and it became popular through homeschooling and certain leaders throughout the 90s, but it's still going today. I don't think they use that term anymore of Christian patriarchy, but you might see it with trad wife content, stuff like that. It's a little more sneaky than it was back then.
I mean, I think the vast majority of churches ascribe to that notion in some level. I think, you see all the time people talking about, women not being able to preach or lead or speak or pray or anything like that in the church. And so, I mean, we see patriarchy every day, obviously, just in general.
Right.
But I think every church would have some level of privilege around, the patriarchy and what they benefit. And you sort of say that nobody who doesn't fit those gender roles benefits. I would probably say nobody but men benefit in that regard,
Exactly.
realistically, because you might you see women online who are sort of, I guess, defending that, but you sort of go, well, how much choice and how much consent is actually happening in that? What was that environment like to grow up in?
I think when I was younger, I believed everything I was told. And I think it's our natural bent to trust our parents. And so I trusted that what they were telling me was true, that this was what God wanted. And it was backed up with everything in my life, homeschooling curriculum, church, sermons. We would listen to sermons on tape. Everything backed up this idea. So I didn't have any opposing information. And I think I didn't have the words to understand or to express what it felt like, how lonely it was to be a girl in this situation, to not have a lot of friends, to not have any sort of dreams that you could have, past being married. But the older I got, the harder it became, and realizing, I think it hurt me in a mental way more than I realized when I was a child and a teenager. And I struggled a lot with depression and anxiety and religious OCD, scrupulosity. And I didn't have the language for those things, but looking back, it's very clear that's what was happening. And so, for instance, the OCD thing, it's constantly praying, constantly panicking that I'm going to go to hell, not wanting to go in the car because I thought I might die and go to hell before I could figure out how to be saved. Like, just constant hypervigilance around, I'm such a bad person and I don't know how to function in this environment. And so that was just really bad for me as a child, growing up with no sense of self. Everything was about the collective and what God wanted, what my father wanted, and nothing had to do with what I wanted. So I didn't realize at the time how hurtful that was on how I would become an adult and learn how to live with that.
Oh, it's heartbreaking to, I hear, I mean, I've chatted with quite a few people and heard a lot of stories and have my own story, but the way that it was just heartbreaking, to sort of hear you talk about just having, it's like extreme self-sacrifice, where you just don't matter outside of being useful to a man.
And then you're also told on top of that that this is what God created you for. And so you don't want to anger God. You don't want to go to hell, and you want to be able to believe that this God is good. But at the same time, you're struggling with it. It's just this, that cognitive dissonance that became more apparent, as I became an adult.
Yeah, absolutely. What was being a teenager like? Because, we think about young kids and you aren't realizing, like you said, you probably are not realizing a lot of what's happening. But as we get older, the I mean, I don't think critical thinking is often fostered in the church anyway, but we start to be able to see things a little bit differently than we, did when we were 6 or 7.
Right. And I think for me, I was so isolated. I had a delayed adolescence in a sense. At one time, I was acting like an adult, right? Because I would be disciplined if I didn't act like an adult. On the other hand, I was treated like a child and I wasn't given any choices. So it was just this weird way to be a teenager. We would go to church once a week, and that church was 2 hours away. And a 2 hour drive away. And so that's where my friends were. And that's the one day a week I would see them. And we were all the same. We all grew up the same way. And so we avoided talking about things like I would imagine teenagers outside of the church would talk about, like boys or things that they were interested in. We talked a lot about like books and, some of us were allowed to watch certain movies, and we could talk about things like that, and we would share prayer requests. It kind of sound when I'm talking about it, it sounds like we were Amish or something, but we were living, next door to every other person in Colorado. So my, one of the highlights of the year was the Civil War ball for homeschoolers in Colorado, where us teenage girls, would make our own Civil War ball gowns because we were supposed to learn how to sew. And we would wear them to the homeschooling ball because that was the only time we were allowed to have a dance, is if we were like, fully clothed with gloves and doing, these old-fashioned dances, which were mostly group dances. That was our, the highlight of the year for me when I was a teenager. Because I love dressing up, but looking back, it's a little sad also because I couldn't have dances and other formats without my parents watching me every moment.
I mean, and I'm just thinking, I guess, even just like the concept of fun as a young person would be different. You would be looking back on that with how do you look back on it?
I mean, I see it as mixed. As I was writing my book, you have to grapple with the good things and the bad things, and they happened all together. And I do have good memories, and I have three siblings. And so, that was mostly who I spent my time with, were my siblings. We didn't always get along, but we understood what it was like to live in our house.
I think that's every sibling's.
Yeah, right. Something, in that sense, that's a normal experience. And we weren't as strict as some other people I knew. We still went to the movie theaters, like to watch Lord of the Rings was a big part of my being a teenager. So we allowed to watch that. Things like that. So we did have fun, but it was always like my father was almost always there and always in charge of things. So it wasn't like, oh, we had room to explore outside of these boundaries. So, but it's mixed, because I can look back and I can focus in on the good stuff, and that's good. But also, when you're dealing with spiritual abuse and emotional abuse, which was happening in my house, it kind of taints those good memories a bit. And it's difficult to pull them out. But yeah, it's both.
And you talked a little bit about the religious OCD. What was it? What was your personal relationship with God like?
When before I was 10, I just took everything that I was told, zero questions. And I think that might be just normal. I think young children think in black and white ways. And so it just made sense. I was like, okay, this is the rules of the world. And then, I hit puberty, and we had somewhat traumatic stuff happened in my life, in my family's life. For instance, there was a forest fire near us, and we were evacuated for 2 weeks. And so it kind of like meshed with these fears I was having about dying, and that kind of ramped up the OCD stuff because I started thinking, I had a thought one day, what if God isn't real? And then my second thought was, if I can think that, then I must be a terrible person. And so I wasn't even grappling with if God's real or not. It was like, how dare I have questions about this? That definitely puts me in a bad place. And so just that, throughout my teenage life, I was grappling with, am I saved? Am I not saved? And I had to meet with like the church elders about this. It was like embarrassing. But, I eventually figured like I'll just do what I'm asked to do and trust that that will be what God wants me to do. And eventually maybe I'll feel, this assurance of faith that everyone was telling me that I would eventually have. I really struggled with that because it wasn't all making sense to me. And I think my brain was like trying to sort stuff and make sense of what my life was like. And it just didn't have room to figure that out. So it was very confusing. So God was kind of like, I saw God as the way I saw my dad. Authoritarian, controlling, masculine. And then that wasn't a very appealing way to think of a divine
No.
creator.
Yeah, especially when, who is, described as being of love.
So like, you're being hurt and you're suffering and you're struggling with stuff, but then someone's telling you this is what love is, and it's like, okay, well, this is terrible.
Yeah, that
But you don't,
sucks.
yeah, you can't say that though. So yeah, I really struggled with that. And it wasn't until I was in my 20s that I started thinking, if there is a God, this God can't possibly want me to feel like this all the time. Because I was, depression, struggling with my dad becoming more controlling in my 20s. I was like, this can't be right. Like, I'm not a child anymore. I got to figure out what I believe for myself.
Now, you referred to that time period as being a stay-at-home daughter, which this is actually even the first time I've heard this language.
Oh,
So obviously,
okay.
I'm assuming it is the equivalent of a stay-at-home mom, but you are a daughter.
Yep, you got that right. I mean, have you heard of Quiverful in Australia?
Oh, no.
Okay, so it's related. It's all related to Christian patriarchy. Quiverful is the ideology that we should have big families, that God's blessed you with. So women don't take birth control, and it's all part of that patriarchal system. So a lot of the women I knew were like constantly pregnant, lots of children. So that's like the Quiverful part of this. And then the stay-at-home daughters, it's before you become that Quiverful wife. It's you are like in this incubator waiting to be married. So between childhood and whenever God brings this man into your life, or whenever your father approves somebody who can marry you, you're supposed to stay at home and serve your father as practice. So, things like I would learn how to like make my dad coffee, or like iron his pants. I did his
All the
invoices
important
for a while.
things.
I know. I did his invoices for a little bit. Yeah. So it's like you're serving your dad the way that I saw my mom serve my dad, in less of a way, obviously. But yeah, it can. I mean, but it can get really, it's really difficult to explain what that's like as you become a young woman and feel like you have this weird relationship with your dad. And I think boundaries, definitely, like emotional boundaries are crossed. It's just not okay.
I mean, I don't think anybody would see practicing with your dad to be a wife as, the most healthy way to learn how to be a wife.
No, I know that now. I know that now, but at the time, nobody was telling me that, so I
No,
didn't know.
of course. And so you said that you were at home until 25. How did you leave home?
So when I was 18, my family moved to Hawaii, and it was even more isolating because I couldn't just leave, and I didn't even have a driver's license at the time. And also there weren't very many eligible men that I could have a courtship with, because we did courtship instead of dating, which is where you sit down with your dad and the other person and you talk about like theology and stuff like that.
It's like the Christian
So
version of Bridgerton.
way less interesting though.
Yeah.
Really boring version of
Oh,
Bridgerton.
yeah.
And I did have a courtship when I was 20 years old. And it was one of the most traumatizing experiences of my life. My dad ended it after a long time. And reasons I get into my book, because it was very complicated. It was like this big relationship for me. I'm being told that I might marry this person. At the same time, I'm being told, don't have any emotions for this person. Like, don't have any love for this person, because we went a step farther from sexual purity. We went to emotional purity. So you will be sinning if you felt love for someone that you weren't betrothed or married to. So, as you can imagine, that it's really difficult when you see somebody all the time. You're thinking you might get married to them, and you want it to work out because that's what you're supposed to do. And then you're getting punished because you have too much affection. It messes with your head.
I
It
mean,
messed with my head.
yeah, that's like, I mean, that's mental torture,
It
really.
is, yeah. Psychological abuse, emotional abuse, and that's when things really started falling for me. As when that courtship ended, my dad was telling me to repent. And something inside of me was like, no, this is not okay. I'm never gonna let him do this to me again. But I didn't have any clue what to do with that information, because I mean, I'm stuck. I don't have money. I don't have like any way to leave. So that's why it took me 5 more years to leave.
And so when you say repent, was it because it was seen to be your fault that that courtship didn't work?
I was supposed to repent for my emotions. So because it was like cheating on my future spouse and hurting his future spouse by feeling love. So I got in trouble because I said I love him, and my dad was very upset about that. It
And
doesn't really
so,
make sense.
well, I mean it does, but it probably wouldn't to anybody who has, who has not been a part of I guess a fundamental religious experience. But so what were the next 5 years like, sort of going, I need to get out somehow, but I just don't know how?
So many little pieces come to mind, because it was like this like build up of, I was talking yesterday with somebody about faith deconstruction and trauma. And so you're sorting out like mentally what you believe. At the same time, you're like being traumatized, and you need to get away from that environment. So it's like it's very difficult for, I think it was for difficult for me to get to a place where I thought I can leave, because I thought it would be wrong to disobey my dad. Even though I was technically an adult, I thought it would be wrong to leave because he told me to stay. And I had never been told that I had adult rights. So I didn't understand that once you turn 18, you can't be held against your will. I didn't know that. And there were just a couple of people who said things to me that stuck in the back of my head, because whenever someone would ask me, why, Don't you want to work? Don't you want to do this? I would just say the script, you know. I would say, oh, I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom one day. That's why I'm staying home now. And that's what God wants, and that's what I want. But they just they're just them asking me if that was okay was so unusual, that I would have any agency, that it just sparked something, and I couldn't respond in that moment how I would now. But I'm just really grateful to them because it kept alive this piece of me that could believe something else is possible.
And
So, yeah, that made a big difference.
planting a seed almost. Just took a bit of time to grow.
And one of those people was the person I'm married to now.
Oh,
And
wow.
yeah, so we've been married 10 years, but at the time he was like, why don't you get a job? Like, he just didn't understand at all. He was like, totally out of his understanding. And I was like, oh,
I
why
can
don't
do
I get a job?
that.
And so I started, my dad wanted me to teach some piano lessons to people he knew. And so, because it wasn't underneath like another male boss, that was like my one loophole to make money. So I started doing that more and was able to save up money that way, over the years. And at the same time, this new guy at church shows up and we fall in love. And so I stay a little bit longer than I was like thinking I would, because I was thinking maybe I'll just move out into my older brother's house. He had left years before. But then I met this guy and I was like, well, Hawaii is very far from everywhere else. It's not like you can come back to visit. So I stayed for a little bit longer, and we did try to do courtship with my dad, and he let us do that for 1 week and then changed his mind. And so we had a secret relationship and decided that we wanted to get married. So we eventually told my dad, and that didn't go over very well. This is a very like short version, but eventually we moved out. I moved out and we moved to Michigan, which is where I am now, just to start a new life. And I know a lot of girls like me get out by getting married. And so I want to acknowledge that, it is very difficult to get out without getting married and having that extra person support. And I feel really lucky because he saw what was happening in my house and he wasn't okay with that. And so he was there when I was standing up against my dad, and trying to assert myself. So, that's meant a lot over the years of having someone who understands what I was going through and stuck with me and wants me to be myself and doesn't keep me back. So
What was it like for you, I guess, reintegrating into mainstream society?
well, it's interesting because I did move to West Michigan, which is I didn't understand this, but it's like a Dutch Reformed community. So very conservative Christians. So we wanted to still go to church, and the church wasn't all that, all that different. But, I was like, oh, women have jobs here. Women can wear pants to church. So I thought maybe it was a little bit different, and it was exciting. But it wasn't like a harsh transition in that sense, because there's very traditional gender roles in a lot of families in West Michigan. So it wasn't so shocking as if I had moved to like a big city. I think that would have probably been more of a shock to my nervous system. But even so, I had PTSD and didn't know it, and I would have panic attacks and struggled with dissociation. And it was so confusing because when I was at home, I was in survival mode. And then when I left, I like could let go. And then that's when all these symptoms really ramped up. because my body was like, that was awful to go through. And so it was this delayed reaction, which I think is pretty typical for a PTSD or complex PTSD. So it was really hard. It was really exciting because I got to go find a job, which took me a long time because guess what? Being a church pianist isn't going to get you a lot of a good resume. So I went on a lot of job interviews that I did not get. So eventually I got a job at a bakery and I started going to community college, and it was like my mind was like blown. There were people who wanted to learn things and who were willing to help me learn whatever I wanted to learn, and it was so exciting. So on one hand I had PTSD, on the other hand I had all this opportunity, like nothing could stop me. In my head, I thought nothing could stop me. So it was a very exciting, traumatizing time.
How long did you and your husband stay a part of the church for?
For a while, for a few years, I tried to make it work. We have different journeys in terms of faith. I think because of my experience as a woman and patriarchy, and I think it's easier for me to see those things. But he's also seen them now as well, of the problems with, men telling women what to do all the time. Because he grew up somewhat like Dutch Reformed. So that's why we moved here to Michigan. It was where his family's from. And church at first was, it felt like a support, like in a sense, we were very poor and they helped us through, like, David had to have a surgery at one point and they helped pay for that, So those things where the church is, they're good at certain things, right? They liked me as long as I was following the rules, and I didn't figure that out at first. Once I started speaking up about things that I was seeing, then it was like I became less of a good person. And I was getting, I almost said I was convicted, but like I was feeling
The
these words
Christian
that come out
language
of
never leaves, does it?
I was feeling like this need to speak about spiritual abuse because I was seeing it so much and nobody was talking about it at the time. I mean, now a lot more people are speaking about it, but back then it felt like nobody was. And I had done a lot of personal work to figure what was happening to me, and I wanted to write something for the church, about abuse. And they're like, the pastor's like, this is great. I think this is really helpful. But first, we got to go to your husband and make sure he's okay with it. And so that should have been like a big red flag. Like, oh, they don't get it.
It's like,
So,
tell me you don't get it without telling me.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was just like, I became eventually the pat that same pastor who really thought I was helpful eventually said I was on the road to apostasy. And
Right.
part of that was because I vote Democrat. It just gets really confusing in like American churches, the political stuff. I was really disturbed when they started bringing in patriarchy church books to Sunday school. So pastors that I knew from my childhood, and
Okay.
I was telling people like this is really bad to read and to support.
Yeah.
And the pastor just told me, adults can discern for themselves. And I was like, well, you wouldn't say that about every book, but you just don't want to listen to me, So, yeah. I just found a place where it's like I wanted to work within the system. And then I got to a place where like the system doesn't want me to work with them. They don't want me here. And I just felt unwelcome. And I'm not a confrontational person, so like I don't feel like I was causing trouble. I just wanted to say the truth. It is really distressing to have people you respect and spend time with And then all of a sudden, you never hear from them again. And that's just, it's just heartbreaking. And I didn't really deconstruct all my faith till after I left the church. You know, I just didn't feel like it was a good place for me. And then I got out and I didn't have to go every week. And I started thinking about what I believed and, you know, really came to peace with where I'm at. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know if that's what it's like in Australia, but churches here, conservative churches here get very political. And if you say anything against the grain, it's like you're an apostate.
It's not quite as intertwined in Australia. My former church was quite conservative, and they very much just went with the notion of whoever God deems able to do the head of state role is who we just pray for them. We just pray for them.
Okay.
Yeah, it was more you'll find, I guess, in Australia, you'll have some churches who will just, it's almost like blind faith in terms of a political stance of just, regardless of who is there, we just pray for them. And then others who are much more, I guess, probably would fit an American mold in terms of getting intertwined with politics. So it's a little bit different. I think we often look at the way that America has religion and politics intertwining and go, oh, we're not doing too bad. Like, not doing too bad. We're just shit at a whole bunch of other things. What was the moment for you like where you did start to have some of those critical thinking skills and you started building a sense of spirituality that was yours, not what somebody else had told you?
I think for me, I'm going to say this and it's going to prove everybody right in my past. But when I went to college, they led me down this path. I don't say that to say that I was indoctrinated. I just mean when I went to college, I had access to all sorts of information that I could read and I could explore. I never felt pushed in any way to believe a certain thing when I was at college. I even had a science teacher who said, you know, that religion and science can coexist. It's just they're answering different questions. And that really meant a lot for me, who was trying to struggle with, like, you know, I was always taught evolution was evil and, you know, demonic. And so being able to just be in this place where I could talk to people and I can meet people from different backgrounds and read books and read primary historical sources and figure out what happened in the past, what does that mean, how to like decide whether a source you're reading is accurate, all that kind of thing, like helped my critical thinking, which I wasn't trained to do, you know. And so I think just learning that in a secular place that wasn't pushing an agenda gave me the freedom to like look at my past and look at, you know, what I believed and think about it and, you know, figure out where I was, what I value after all of this, you know, because I do think I still hold some values that I learned from church. Especially like, you know, I like teachings of Jesus and loving other people no matter what. Those kinds of values have stuck with me. And I think it's come with a lot of time and testing and figuring out what really works. And then also, you know, finding my intuition, which had been so tamped down that I didn't know what I thought, you know? And so figuring out what that feels like and testing it and making decisions, which is very, very difficult when you've never made decisions before. And then seeing what happens when you make decisions and going to therapy also, but learning that not every decision is a life or death decision. I guess that's like one of the big things is like, I can go to the store and I can pick out nail polish or makeup and like I can decide what color they should be. Like that takes time. I mean, I'm much better now, but like before it was like, I don't even know what I like. Like, because I wasn't allowed to wear certain colors, and so making those small decisions is a lot harder than I thought it would be. But just practicing and doing that and practicing my own independence, has landed me in a much, much better place.
It's really, I think it's really difficult for people to imagine why those small decisions would be hard. But it is when your mind and your heart and your whole entire being is trained one way, it is like an internal tug of war almost. It's just I mean, that's how I would have described my own experience, is just that inner conflict. I remember the first time that I bought oracle cards and a crystal, and I remember thinking, oh my, like I almost nearly had a panic attack going, oh my gosh, like what if I am inviting the devil into my home? You know, what if, and it's all of those what if, and especially when and I would imagine that within the Christian patriarchy, there would be that God has this divine plan for your life, and so everything that you do has to, contribute to that plan, and so there is, it's just constant anxiety around, is this the right choice according to God's plan?
And then like, it has a lot for women, especially because you have to think about, is this outfit going to tempt this random strange man in the store? So what do I wear that's, not going to cause him to sin, whatever that means, because we're not explaining, nobody explained to us what that meant exactly. But just like not constantly seeing myself through a man's eyes. I was constantly like checking myself, scanning my body to see what it would look like to a man. And now I inhabit my body and I decide what I want to appear as, instead of thinking constantly about managing other people's expectations and desires.
The burden of responsibility is rough. What has the healing journey been like for you?
Let's see. I've been out for about 11 years now. So at the beginning, like I said, it's not much language to explain what I was feeling. I didn't actually have a lot of names for emotions. I just felt everything at once, and it was very confusing. And I had to figure out that therapy wasn't bad or evil as well. I took a psychology class in college, and I was like, wow, our brains are so amazing. And just taking that class, the teacher gave me a tip about nightmares because, I've had night terrors, and she gave me a good tip about like how to work with that. And I was like, wow, our brains just, they're brains and they're an organ, and we can do things to help us feel better. So, over the years, I was doing a lot of my own research into these things, and then finally realized that I can't do all this on my own, because I think with trauma, especially complex trauma, like it's in our bodies, and I didn't even know that. But I was like, I feel sick and I can't get over these things, and I need to work out what's happening. So I finally found somebody who specializes in religious trauma here in my town, which was surprising to me. I didn't know that was a thing. And we've done trauma work, EMDR therapy was really helpful. I think talk therapy can be good, but I think with trauma, for me, it wasn't reaching these deep places from my childhood. From my childhood, when I didn't have language, I think that's a key thing, is I didn't have the words for my pain. And so EMDR let me work on those traumatic memories without having to tell somebody about them. Like, I know there's like some different ways to do EMDR, but I didn't have to overexplain what I was remembering to my therapist to process it with a safe person. And I felt so much better. It really helped me sleep better and function better. It was really, really hard work. Like, I didn't know what I was getting into. I'm not sure. It took me a long time to find a therapist and then to actually get the guts to go. And it was really hard work. And I'm still in therapy, but I'm not in the same place I was 5 years ago. I feel so much more stable. I have a better support system. I know where I can go for help. I feel like the world isn't ending. Like, I mean, we live in 2024. Maybe in some ways the world does feel like it's ending, but I do feel like I have power over some aspects of my life in a way that I didn't have before. And also, I'm able to recognize that I have limitations and it's not on me to save the whole world. Which is what I was, I struggled with a lot, because even after not believing that I needed to save the world for Christ, I still felt like I need to save the world from anything bad. And then just realizing I'm one person. I can do what I can do, and then there's a limit, and I can do my best, but I think the constant anxiety of trying to save other people doesn't actually help anybody. Instead of just like finding myself, finding how to heal, and then radiating that out into my world, my little world, wherever I can. And at the end of the day, then I, clock back out. Like, you can't do everything, or you're going to get burnout, because I'm just saying that because I've burnt out and it's just difficult. Another part of healing has been like finding other people. And I think when I first left, I didn't know anybody who had left the stay-at-home daughter life. And over the years, I found so many more people who have left, and nonprofits and communities. And I feel like it's really ramping up the past few years. And that's exciting, because I think there's much more of a support system now for people who might be leaving than there was when I left. So.
I think, and I think that that's one of the key aspects to healing with either, religious trauma or spiritual abuse, because, one of the things that church does well is community, and, it's almost like instant community. And so when you leave that environment, it, like you said, can feel isolating and lonely, and like you have no one to turn to. And so it's always really nice to be able to find your people again, wherever they are in the world.
And you're in Australia, so like this is so exciting that we can connect on something like this and live on opposite sides of the world.
Absolutely. What brings you joy and peace now?
Well, so many things. I mean, I love books, kind of obvious, but I love reading. I love exploring other people's experiences and worlds and imagined or memoirs. I love just learning and reading. That's my day-to-day little joy. And I love being outside and just exploring the world as much as I can. I love traveling. But even in Michigan, like in the US, Michigan is like a state nobody really remembers as a state, because we're so kind of we're up north and it's like nobody comes here. But it's a beautiful state. We have the Great Lakes, the biggest freshwater lakes, and it's just a beautiful place to go in the summertime. Just being near water brings me so much peace. And so just having like this life of so many little details. Sometimes I struggle with trauma, but most of the time I'm noticing just how amazing it is to be alive and to be able to like every day is different and new. And it's just an incredible to me. Yeah, I love it.
Speaking of memoirs, you have just released your book. Tell us a little bit
Yes.
about that.
Yes. So, when I went to college, I wanted to study publishing and writing, and I wanted to study fiction, and I did, but I kept my own story kept leaking through, and I realized I need to tell my story, or it's just going to keep haunting me for the rest of my life. So I that was the beginning of my book, which is called Rift, a memoir of breaking away from Christian patriarchy. And I'm really excited about it because I think most memoirists say that it's healing to write their memoirs. And that is true. But also I'm excited that I'm done with this book and it can go out into the world and meet people where they are, and maybe it can help them on their own journeys, wherever that might be. I think seeing your story mirrored in a book ha is really powerful. And that happened for me with the book Educated by Tara Westover, which is about a girl who grew up Mormon. And I didn't grow up Mormon, but it resonated a lot with me of her trying to get out and go to college. So I hope that this book can meet people in that way. It is a story of me growing up in this movement and then figuring out how to leave and what it's like afterwards and grappling with the real world. I think, like we've discussed, I went from Christian patriarchy to the outside world thinking it would be non-patriarchy, but that is not true. Patriarchy is all over our culture. And so grappling with that and figuring out what does that mean for me, and there's systems bigger than I am. And it's also me grappling with my own complicity in these toxic systems. So thinking about in the US, homeschooling has traditionally been very whitewashed, and I learned a different history than what happened about slavery, about the indigenous people. And so I wanted to address that in the book and come to terms with my ancestry, both in my family and in our belief system of what it's done, the harm it's done to more than just me. So I wanted to open it up wider than just my experience, because I think that's important. And I'm really proud of that aspect, just because it's hard to face the things that you are complicit in. And but I'm really glad I'm working on that. So yeah.
Amazing. Now, I've been finishing these episodes with one question. And aside from the wonderful book, what would you say to somebody who is fresh out of church, fresh in their deconstruction, whatever language they use, but it is the beginning of that journey for them? What would you say to them?
It's okay to not have all the answers, and it's okay to be uncertain about the future. And you're not the only person. Like, you're not alone in this. And there are people who are here who want to talk with you and be with you as you work through those things. So it can be such a lonely thing to deconstruct or to leave a church, because you're often leaving your family or your community. But there are so many people on this other side who want you to be who you are, and they want to accept you for who you are, not try to force you into a box. So I think once you take that step, it's going to be hard, but it's going to be so much better for you in the long run that you can be yourself.
And I think, I think part of what you just said is the reason that I even wanted to start this podcast, which was to, that saying to be seen is to be understood. And it's sort of, there are someone will hear part of their story in somebody's story that I'm, showing. And I think, like you said, find your people. And connect with people. Instagram is a wonderful place. Social media has many faults, but it has many, many wonderful things as well.
Yes,
So,
yeah. It can be a lifesaver just because you can be so isolated depending on where you live, and social media can open up worlds.
absolutely. It absolutely can. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's been really nice to talk to you, and hope we can stay connected.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Surface. Until next time, take care, stay true to who you are, and remember, your voice and your story matters always.